Chapter 6, R, Right Under Your Nose. Narcissism is on a spectrum. You just got the overt side of the equation. I bet you even recognized a bunch of those behaviors in the last chapter, right? Good job. Now you're ready to learn about the more covert narcissy behaviors, the ones that are harder to spot. Preface. I wrote this piece to move past intense feelings that were blocking my writing process. They were just for me. I'm not usually this raw publicly, but in retrospect, my editor made the point that you, the reader, may be feeling some of the same distressing and hopeful emotions. Therefore, there was an argument for leaving this in. So I did. I just started crying when I wrote that. I'm in Nathan's studio, because Sam's is too cold for me. And he has his headphones in and his back to me as he paints and I type. I don't want this part in the book, but I think it's got to come out. You know, it's pretty fucked up that I know so fucking much about this topic. I feel sorry for the little kid me, who was brought up by narcissists and then continued to choose people and groups that were the new family, but just ended up being another version of the same thing. I could never just be myself, my whole self. I was different, and that was never okay. There was always something to pick at, criticize, yell at, try to slap, shame, or punish me for. That's fucked up. I am and always was sweet and full of love, lots of love. And all I ever wanted to do was share it with everyone I met. In some way, share my love. You gotta burn a bitch at the stake for that? So fucked up. So many times. Fucking get her. Why would you want to extinguish that? Extinguish me. I never did anything to you. Maybe try to help. Maybe tell the truth. What? I smile and sing and dance and laugh too much for you? Fucking sad for you. Then leave. Why stay to beat me up? If you don't like me or my behavior, just leave. If you want to love me, but you don't love yourself, it's not going to work. I can't love for two. You end up resenting me for it anyway. And you don't tend to me in any reciprocal way anyway. It just doesn't work. So now what? I'm just alone? Like forever? That sounds so hard. I want to lean on someone's too. I want people to help me and connect with me the way I want to help and connect. I want someone to listen to me. I want to cry and have someone ask me why, and then fucking listen to me and my answer without rushing me or waiting for me to be done. I want someone or several people to want to comfort me and hug me when I need it for as long as I want. I want someone to be as curious about learning about me as I am about them. I want someone as kind as I am. I want to spend time with people who are as funny and smart and sweet as I am. I want someone who wants to communicate with me. I want competent, brilliant, funny, and kind people beside me who always want to change the world for the better. I want to talk all night, be comfortable in silence, support each other's work and play, so much play. I want freedom in my life. I want to ask for something and get it. I want to speak to large crowds and share what I know and have it be the medicine they need. I want to heal the world. I want to do the work I was always meant to do. I want to help. I want to love. I want to laugh. I want to feel and be and do whatever I want, and I want that to be okay. I want to be free. I just want to be me. I want to soar. Thank you for making me me. P.S. Even this, I think of it in a Venn diagram where one circle says soar, S-O-R-E, and the other says soar, S-O-A-R. Pain teaches us a lot, including how to feel joy. The nice guy narcissist. He's an anxious pleaser, so the niceness is actually about him. His needy pull to get everyone to perceive him as so nice. He always says how he loves women, though doesn't say a word when his buddies say sexist shit, because he wants their approval. And he uses his female friends as a therapist, taking up space and airtime when he spends time with them. Also, he's so easily wounded by even a simple disagreement that the emotional labor required to deal with him is draining, which he takes zero responsibility for. It's a willful ignorance where he didn't know, even though you told him four times. Then he spends all his energy providing evidence about how you never told him. Energy he could easily spend on doing the thing you asked for, but now he's in his defensive, victim-y shame spiral. Also, he's kind of more of a whiny apologist who says things like, not all men, or not all white people. This is a particularly gross energy to be around. And the nice guy narcissist is ignoring his privilege while further acting from it while accusing you of being the persecutor. Poor you. Barf. What to do? This guy has a sweet side, so it's real easy to get sucked in. Early on, you could try a gentle yet honest approach, like, I like it when we hang out. I just like to get to talk more about me, okay? It can have an impact, again, if done right away. But if he's gotten used to you being his shoulder to cry on and you say that, or something a bit more pointed because you're getting frustrated that he keeps taking from you without giving back, beware of the shame spiral. In fact, this whole covert side of the narcy spectrum is known for the shame spiral. So I might as well get you up to speed. Note, the shame spiral is what I call the tactic narcissists use to get you to back off and let them engage in their destructive behavior. They go into a tailspin because they have no capacity to deal with the truth you just dropped on their doorstep. The unconscious drive is that if they speak first and verbally beat the shit out of themselves, one, they are now in control of the situation. Two, you will stop saying what you are saying. Three, they fake absolve themselves from taking responsibility for the behavior that had you call them out. Four, they create a scenario where they can't possibly be expected to do anything to improve the situation. Narcissist shame spiral because it works. But that doesn't make an ounce of it true. It's still a multi-layered pile of utter horseshit. What to do? Here's an example of the nice guy narcissist's version of the shame spiral. Remember, sex, gender is ultimately irrelevant. This could be anyone. Let's say you get together with this narcy friend for brunch, and for nearly the entirety of the first hour, they talk about themselves. They couch it as asking your advice about something and let you say short sentences here and there, but that's mostly just to keep you engaged in the conversation revolving around them. You start to feel that vampiric drain. You might even make a lightweight attempt to change the subject a couple of times. No dice. Back to them. Every time. Now you're in a position to just give in to the captive audience role and be talked at. Or you make a direct request like the one from earlier. You say, I like it when we hang out. I just like to get to talk a little bit more about me, okay? If they then shame spiral, it might be a dramatic and red-faced shutdown, which you then might feel compelled to ask them what's wrong, or worse, apologize for asserting yourself and setting a boundary. They might even say, well, I thought you were helping me, but I guess not. Or, I'm just really struggling with this and thought you could help. Or, well, that's pretty harsh. I didn't realize I was such a drain on you for asking for help. That last one is particularly galling because they are naming the thing that they did to you, but spinning it like it's a flaw you have. Ew. The more sophisticated one is there any possible scenario where you're misperceiving what I'm doing? This is it possible defense is kind of genius gaslighting because there's no effective answer and they appear open-minded in just asking the question. You know what they're doing is bullshit, so you want to say no, but then you're the closed-minded one who won't negotiate. It's the perfect double bind. What's such bullshit is there's nothing to negotiate. You said what's bugging you about their behavior, and they are trying to gaslight you instead of validating your position, point, feelings, and talk you out of it, as well as convince you that the only reasonable answer is yes, and they win. The answer is yes. It's possible. Anything is possible. That is not what I think is going on here. So let me repeat my point. I always chuckle when I get this dropped on me. The fact that they think they're going to blow this one by me is cute. I tell them, anything's possible. And then say the most ridiculous wish I can think of at the time. Then I go back to my point. They're often smart enough to see how dumb they just were and that I saw it too. Have you had this kind of shit happen to you? Did you get painted into a corner and apologize? Don't shame yourself if you did. We all have. It's a mindfuck. And they are really skilled at it because they've had a lot of practice doing it to people and a lot of reinforcement to continue it because social norms dictate we back off when confronted like that. The shame spiral is truly insidious and comes in many forms. We'll discuss several of them in the next few caricatures. The charming coward. They talk a real good game, but rarely deliver. This is a kind of con man-ish, too cool for school narcissist. They often have had a flaky, absent, and/or emotionally neglectful dad, so now they're super rejection sensitive and developed an ability, out of childhood necessity, to manipulate and control people to, one, get their needs met, since it was never okay to just ask, and two, so people won't leave, like dad did. They often rely on looks and are articulate and well-dressed. They have a chameleon-like social ability in that they adjust the conversation to things they think you are interested in. The conversation is pretty superficial, but has the facade of paying attention to what you like. But at the end of the day, once you've been lured in by all that apparent focus on you, the dynamic soon switches to being all about them. They gotcha. We've all been there. What to do? Well, take it slow. At work, don't tell them personal details. Just stick to the job, even if they appear overly casual and friendly. And be even more careful dating this one. If they immediately appear to be too good to be true, that's a red flag, because they are. Everybody puts their best foot forward when they first meet people, yes. But if you find yourself daydreaming about how perfect they are, Well, get yourself grounded back to earth. Love bombing is a thing. I like to reference Margaret Singer in her 1996 book, Cults in Our Midst, and her definition of love bombing because, one, despite it becoming mainstream knowledge recently, it's been going on a long, long time. Two, she was the mentor at the place I was clinically trained. She died my first year there, and I was always sorry I never met her. Three, it places the act of love bombing in the context of cults and cult recruiting, which is squarely where it ought to be, in my opinion, because it is brainwashing, not love. She said, as soon as any interest is shown by the recruits, they may be love bombed by the recruiter or other cult members. This process of feigning friendship and interest in the recruit was originally associated with one of the early youth cults, but soon it was taken up by a number of groups as part of their program for luring people in. Love bombing is a coordinated effort, usually under the direction of leadership, that involves long-term members flooding recruits and new members with flattery, verbal seduction, affectionate, but usually non-sexual touching, and lots of attention to their every remark. Love bombing, or the offer of instant companionship, is a deceptive ploy accounting for many successful recruitment drives. Pretty dark shit, huh? Notice how she says non-sexual touching. Charming people. You can be lured in without being sexual. Narcissists do it all the time, professionally and personally. And if a new boss is treating you like the newest superstar hire, and you're going on work lunches, just the two of you, readjust your work boundaries. Also, you may not want to text with bosses or even coworkers, at least for a little while. I think the other two main points to highlight here are flooding and instant companionship. If you can think of nothing else but this person you've known for a very short time, it's probably because you are interacting with them way more often than what is natural for someone who's essentially still a stranger. But Dr. Kelly, this is my soulmate. Slow down there, killer. Love takes time. Even a solid platonic friendship takes time to build into something trustworthy. Slow and steady wins the race on this one, Sparky. The foundations for a grounded, healthy, supportive companionship is not instant. Friendships aren't coffee. Partnerships are not instant. And if you've had orgasms, you are on brain drugs. Oxytocin is the neurochemical for attachment, so you sure as hell want to be objective and slow in your evaluation of a person before you got that oxytocin on board and think everything that comes out of their mouth is a bar of gold. Yikes. Yeah, and who actually does that now? Nobody. We've got a lot of unhappy, incomplete, and insecure folks out there who'd rather believe in a fantasy or instant true love than be with themselves. In the 80s, that made them ripe for religions and cults. But it's all the same shit. Narcissism makes disconnected, incomplete humans vulnerable to extremist groups of all kinds. There are plenty rebranded cults today, and all the same false beliefs and brainwashing is sucking them in. People are terrified of being alone. Why? Because no one taught us the emotional intelligence skills required to like ourselves. I say it in damn near everything I write now. Global healing is achieved by teaching people the skills to like themselves. And since these days you kind of can't spit without hitting a narcissist, this book is another attempt at helping you to heal. Let's press on. The know-it-all compensator. These folks are super insecure about their average IQ, and they are constantly regurgitating to you something they read somewhere or heard somewhere, like it's ancient wisdom or some shit. It can go way the other way, too. They can have a high IQ, but no emotional intelligence skills, so they constantly feel anxiety and shame about not knowing something, and therefore know everything. They are often so attached to academic knowledge that they lack wisdom and social skills, so they do a lot of yeah-butting and interrupting in general. They also do this thing that makes me laugh out loud when it happens. When you disagree with them on a point, they smugly shake their heads and say, "No, no, sorry, no." Like they have the final say on what you think, or you're just stupid. I think it's hilarious. It's so rude. I'm almost impressed they permit themselves to behave that way. They're just so sure. For real, though, these folks are not fun to be around. And they talk hella shit about you behind your back. Grown, accomplished adults. Like they are still living out some high school dynamics. It blows my mind. What to do? If you must interact with these folks at work, I hope you don't choose to socialize with them, but it's your choice and your funeral. I suggest you don't laugh in their faces like I do. I honestly don't mean to. I'm just so caught off guard by their dickishness. Most of the time, I think you could just nod and leave. They do tend to be well-read, informed, and a wealth of knowledge, so you could stick around and learn something. Just try not to take them or their unintentional insults too seriously, and you'll probably be fine. You may want to have a line prepared to facilitate a graceful exit. Love to stay and be talked at some more, but I gotta go, is my sarcastic go-to. But perhaps a tamer, well, it's been enlightening, but I gotta go do some actual work now, is more your style. The sexist rescuer / white knight. The sexist rescuer is the enabling white woman I mentioned before. These women who jump in to defend a white man at a meeting when another woman calls him out on something, usually privilegey. It's like they've internalized sexism and the patriarchal model and compete with other women for the approval of and power grab from the top dog, the straight white male. In the animal world, aren't the males supposed to compete with each other for our approval? I never got it. Throwing another woman under the bus to climb the bullshit ladder. You ought to be ashamed. The White Knight is similar, and there's a great book out there about it by Mary Lamia and Marilyn Krieger. I think of the dude who only dates women or men with serious unresolved emotional problems. Or an addict who's not only not in a recovery program, but is still also actively using. I also think of those straight white guys who only date Asian women, which is hella racist too, by the way. What to do? I call out the sexist rescuer, male, female, or non-gender identified, for bus-throwing bullshit. I don't like that behavior, and I loathe how it upholds the patriarchy and white supremacy. We must work together so we can all rise together, and that horseshit ain't gonna get us there. You may prefer a softer approach. Most do, let's be honest. You could ask to be on a committee with some HR programming people about power dynamics at work. I never thought much came of meetings like that. Mostly because there were no queer folk, women, or people of color in any kind of leadership position in those cases. It just seemed like white guilt going through the motions, play acting. Speaking of acting, the pantomiming woke narcissist. Oh, there are more and more of these popping up all over, and boy, are they a treat. Not. And the word woke has been appropriated and twisted into a negative thing. Nah, having your eyes, heart, and mind open is still a positive thing. I will say, though, few things will turn my stomach more than the moralistic drivel of the fake social justice warrior. For those of us actually standing up and fighting for the change that benefits all, this kind of nonprofit sector white dude with dreadlocks and is trustafarian is the stuff of nightmares. These pricks present as super pro-women, pro-POC, pro-queer, etc. Yet at meetings, they interrupt, take up space, engage in hella microaggressions, and demonstrate all around pretty entitled and privilegey behavior, which is what they preach against. Uber hypocrites. These are the bumble dates in San Francisco, where for an hour and a half long dinner, they ask you exactly zero questions about you as they monologue on about themselves and what they think. And then they want to split the check. There are also these nonprofit martyrs who think if you don't sacrifice your life and happiness for the cause, you must not care. You definitely don't care as much as they do, according to them. It's the ones with the bumper stickers that say, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention, or some shit like that. I believe happiness is a choice, often a difficult one that requires discipline and practice. I don't think I'm stupid or apathetic because I like myself, and I laugh and play a lot. I believe joy and love are dope, and they're my fuel for helping people. And I honestly don't give a shit who agrees or disagrees with that, because I'm the living proof. But I digress. If they're pantomiming woke, pay attention. It's not about the cause. It's about them. What to do? Don't believe their hype. If your gut tells you something's up, listen. When their actions don't match up with anything they preach, you'll know. If you smell bullshit, it's there. These are the ones who will gaslight the shit out of you too, so be careful. Note. Gaslighting is one of those psych concepts that's made it into the mainstream fairly recently, and still not a lot of people totally get what it means. Let me break it down for you. The old timers in psych have always used this term because it's based on an old movie where a guy slowly drives his wife crazy by telling her there's nothing wrong with the lighting that she sees flickering. The lights are powered by gas. Get it? It's a great flick, by the way, a slow burn of diabolical, sexist horror, good acting. Gaslighting, in a nutshell, is a deliberate mindfuck. I never said that, is the gaslighter's favorite sentence. They're liars, and their blatant lies often make you question yourself, what you think, what really happened, and reality itself. Gaslighting is psychological abuse. And I hope psychological abuse is a deal breaker for you in any relationship, platonic or romantic. But what do you do when it's your coworker or boss? Get a new job, one where you are the boss. I'm serious, but until you do, trust in your own values, beliefs, memory, and gut. You get an internal nope. From anyone or anything someone says, know that's your truth. Don't let anybody talk you out of your truth, no matter how certain they appear. Your gut knows. And ultimately, they know too. It's a game for them, a power trip of who they can manipulate. And they'll die on that hill of bullshit, so you can't back down either. If the shit hits the fan, go to HR and say the words gaslighting, psychological abuse, hostile work environment, harassment, and lawyer. They'll listen. And do it sooner rather than later, because these fuckers don't need much time to spin their next web of lies to cover their asses. It's worth mentioning DARVO here. DARVO refers to the reaction of sexual offenders, but any perpetrator of fucked up behavior, really, engages in when someone attempts to hold them accountable for their fucked up behavior. DARVO stands for deny, attack, and reverse the role of victim and offender. First, they deny that they did the thing, which is a lie. Then they attack the person confronting them and calling them out, which is bullshit. But people often buy into it because they're afraid of conflict. Then the perpetrator reverses the role of victim and offender so that the perpetrator now plays the victim and makes the actual victim or whistleblower into the so-called offender. They attack the victim or whistleblower's credibility and say bullshit like witch hunt, which is some appallingly sexist shit that no one talks about, but whatevs. Are you following this linear plan of fuckery? Can you believe this is so goddamn common? It actually has a fucking acronym? What blows my mind is that despite the call out in academia, media, and mental health, it still works. Smart, educated people are still mindfucked by this DARVO process, and the psychos still get away with it. I think it's because people are afraid of standing up and confronting people who have demonstrated they will go way outside of what's socially acceptable to achieve their malevolent goals. And people don't want to be their next victim. It's scary to be around someone who feels glee when they make you feel pain. But I think backing down and letting them get away with it is cowardly, gross, and a bummer. I've been put through this ringer and been burned, but there's no way that'll keep me quiet anytime I see it going on. That's the only thing that's going to stop this evil shit. All people standing up for what they believe in, no matter what. Also, it's a cure for narcissism, but we'll get to that later. The Fall on the Sword Narcissist. This is one of my favorites, and I've been saying this for years. I had been developing this idea in my head about this other end of the narcy spectrum. Not the asshole side, but the other side. Not the acting out narcy, but the acting in kind. Then it all clicked at a drag show, as so many things do. The drag queen got a sword standing upward with the sharp end in her stomach and then leaned into it. Ah, why? Why was she leaning into it? And she yelled, "Owie!" as she looked at us in the audience with a pained yet accusing face that said, "Why would you do this to me?" It was so fucking hilarious, and in that moment of laughing till tears, a light bulb went on in my head. That's it! The Fall on the Sword Narcissist! These people are desperate for love and acceptance, and since they have no idea that those come from within and from the self, they pull and pull for you to validate them. Of course, your natural reaction to desperation is to get away from it. So it's a shitty self-fulfilling prophecy for the Fall on the Sword Narcissist because they developed the desperation from a kind of childhood rejection, then grew up and pulled for that wound to be filled by others' love and approval. But people don't like how that feels, to be desperately pulled on like that. So they pull away, which the Fall on the Sword Narcissist experiences as more rejection, which confirms their deepest fear that they are truly unworthy of love. Ain't that a bitch? What to do? Stay true to yourself and your values when these folks are in your workspace. They will pull hard. You can give them your agreement, approval, or even praise when you authentically feel that, but it'll never be enough. And giving them some may make them pull at you more because they think they can get more out of you. It does evoke pity, and they often have a sweet side. It's just so hard to be around someone so easily wounded, not by anything you did, even though that's their delusion or false belief, but because that childhood wound has them walking around metaphorically bleeding all over everybody. And they're kind of relentless in their pursuit. They're the ones at meetings who keep repeating their point over and bloody over again. Ugh. And you can see on their face that they really do believe you aren't understanding something they're saying. Because if you did, you obviously would agree. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. It's sad and taxing. Many times I've found myself saying, no, I don't need further clarification. I get it. I just don't agree. The look of surprise followed by the visible deflation is just sad. With absolutely no self-awareness of their neediness, their behavior is often not suitable for a professional environment, in my opinion. And without the self-awareness, there obviously is no taking responsibility for their behaviors that were the actual cause of their own pain. And now coworkers are in charge of emotional labor at work or some kind of passive-aggressive acting out like the silent treatment, side-eyeing, or mean mugging like elementary school. Just continue to be the grown-up and act according to your core values. Notice the pull when it happens. Validate that instinct in you in order to not get entangled. Extraction is way harder than never getting entangled in the first place. Be alert and validate your emotions and your instincts. The repugnant repeller. This is the extreme version of the fall on the sword narcissist. And they're hard to be around. These folks are unconsciously, mostly, trying to repel other people to confirm what they already know, their deep, dark fear, that they are truly a piece of shit and are unworthy and undeserving of love. The manner in which they repel you is obviously outside of social norms. So far out, in fact, that I believe there's anger under there. Unacknowledged, of course. This is the motivational speaker brought into the high school gym who hawks up loogies throughout his speech and the teens giggle, gag the whole time, solidifying the repugnant repeller's humiliation. They are often unkempt in a way that people without housing cannot help, but the repugnant repeller can. They often come from multiple forms of privilege, but don't wash their hair, so there's a serious dandruff problem they look like they just gave up on. Or they don't brush their teeth. Or they talk, at work, about their chronic hemorrhoids or undescended testicle. I'm not fucking joking around, by the way. This shit is way inappropriate and way past awkward to be around. It's gross. And they can totally do something about it, but they don't. I think that's the anger dump. They make you deal with them. They put you in a no-choice scenario. You are now a prisoner of their hell. What to do? Fuck. This is a no-win for you as a coworker. You're either going to silently suffer at the smell or sight of the repugnant repeller, or you're going to be painted as the insensitive, intolerant, or mean one if you say something, even if you say it in the best way it can be said. Just stay away if you can. You can't save them. Your only real option at work is to go to HR and say, I have a problem and it's kind of awkward. Can I talk to you, please? I've tried to just ignore it and I feel for the guy. I do. I'm just not sure how to talk to Ted about how he smells. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I thought this was something you all at HR handle, right? And have them handle it. Now you have a paper trail and you said all the sensitive things. You can ask them to keep it anonymous as well. Not a lot of options here for this sitch. Good luck. Chaos seekers. Speaking of anger, these folks chronically stuff their anger to the point of not knowing it's there and then dodge it by seeking or creating drama. Stuffed anger really festers, and these folks usually hit a crisis point and seek help due to panic attacks. Unfortunately, they often just get benzos, don't explore the root causes, and never do the anger work. Instead, these folks engage in compulsive behaviors to escape their anger and their deep fear of being alone. They may smoke, drink, eat, have sex, anything to the extreme. They may even marry an addict or criminal to keep it going. They may be the criminal. The chaos seeker is the gossip at work and usually the crier. I'm all for crying, people. I just think it is mostly inappropriate at work. I also think it can be used as an attention-seeking method, and if done frequently, may have questionable motives. But it's one of those things that's never a one-off with the chaos seekers. As with all narcissism, it's a pattern of behaviors. What to do? Just be careful, especially at work, not to join in. If gossiping isn't within your value system, don't do it. There's a seductive quality to these folks, and you may find yourself engaging in behaviors you normally never would. And you'll wonder how you got there so deep, so fast. It can be alluring and exciting to get in with a chaos seeker, but the fun doesn't last. You'll be their surrogate therapist in no time, and you'll walk away from hanging out with them drained. Pay attention to the drain and the push past your boundaries. If you find yourself swept up, ask yourself why. What about you likes the dark ride that they bring? Don't judge yourself. Most of us have been trained to bury our dark thoughts and urges, and if the chaos seeker shows us what we've denied, cool. Now you know. Many have been beckoned by these folks, and you won't be the last. Live and learn. Just get out when you realize it and tighten up your boundaries. Define what your values are and get back to behaving according to them. You're not boring for wanting to get off that roller coaster. The shitty gift giver. They are real tricky because we've all been socialized to believe that no matter what gift anyone gives us, the polite thing to do is be grateful. Yes. Generally, yes. Manners matter. The problem is that narcissists know what proper manners are and capitalize on the fact that most people abide by them. Then they use that knowledge to manipulate people that don't have narcissistic personality disorder. There are different rules and behaviors when dealing with someone with a break in their development. And sometimes the only effective thing to do is something we would normally consider rude. The shitty gift giver often gives cheap, secondhand, dirty, broken, or obviously not you gifts. They may do this because they're seeking negative attention, and a shitty gift at a big party means everyone at the party will be talking about them. Yep, it's a thing. The gross but lesser behaviors might be that they make you part of the work of getting your own gift, or have obviously put zero thought into your gift, or they want credit for what they almost bought you. It's super manipulative and power trippy because they fully expect you to fall all over yourself thanking them no matter what. Gross. What to do? Accept that your gifts from them will suck. Make no big deal at all about wanting or receiving gifts from them. I'm good without a gift. I have everything I need. Thanks. Or just a simple thank you, no matter what hideous piece of shit you open from them. So I guess I'm saying fake it. If you know they feed off negative attention and manipulating you into being grateful to them, give them nothing. Don't feed that monster. And ask them to include gift receipts next time. The millennial narcissist. Millennials take a lot of shit, which is kind of a bummer since this generation is creative, innovative, smart, and well-educated. The other side of that coin is their ability to spin and believe their own bullshit. They churn defensive statements like, I don't feel heard, or I don't feel safe. Neither of these are statements of feeling, despite using the word feel. Therefore, the millennial narcissist dons the facade of emotional intelligence without actually having any real skills. P.S. kid, the friggin' world ain't safe. So I don't know what fantasy you're chasing. Better to be brave, learn skills, and build resilience to cope with the reality of the world and those in it. Not sure where this demand came from. To me, it always sounded like the cousin of, it's not fair. Seems like a childish reaction to diversity. Because they are often well-educated and come from financial privilege and have parents that want to be their friend instead of enforcing consequences for breaking rules, often never clarifying the family's rules in the first place and guilt-tripping the kid's character when they act out. Then, having been raised with no consequences or enforced accountability, these kids enter the workplace entitled and fragile as fuck. They often verbally bypass basic social interactions that I believe increase self-esteem and self-confidence. Appreciate it is not the same thing as saying thank you, in my clinical opinion. No worries is a fucking universe away from the impact of saying you're welcome. Think about the power of you're welcome. Think about how those words land. You engaged in an act of giving to another human, and that human expresses genuine gratitude with a thank you. They acknowledged your generous act to them, and then you tell them, you're welcome. You acknowledge and validate yourself for your generosity. Then you acknowledge the other person for their expression of gratitude. It's a no-brainer win-win. It's so damn neighborly. You think Mr. fucking Rogers would have dropped a quick no worries on people? Hell no. Fred was all about keeping that love energy open and flowing. I think no worries shuts that down. It encourages narcissistic exchanges saying, you didn't put me out, so don't neurotically worry about taking up space in the world. Instead of, you are welcome to what I have. I want to help you and give to you if I can. I also think people now avoid saying you're welcome because they are fearful and or shameful about shining any light of attention on the fact that they helped you. Much like a thank you can acknowledge a compliment such as your nails look awesome or thank you. Not a damn thing wrong with agreeing that you like your nails too. Fake humble is gross anyway. A you're welcome acknowledges your generosity, and what the hell is wrong with that? What? You don't have the self-confidence to bask in your own glory? No. In fact, most people don't. It makes me sad. So they'll just sweep the you're welcome under the rug and miss a chance to repeat a self-affirming, totally socially normalized pleasantry that can carve new, positive neural pathways. Bummer. Remember, folks, practice makes happy. And happy people act right. Dr. J.J. Kelly. While I'm on this outrage train, my bad is a wholly unacceptable substitute for I'm sorry. I made a mistake when I blank, and I won't do it again. I'd like to make it up to you by blank. An I'm sorry builds character by practicing accountability for one's actions. It also teaches eating one's shit sandwich with dignity intact. You can engage in a humble act and admit mistakes, and it makes you stronger if you do it skillfully. Almost no one does it skillfully, but I'm working on that. Anyway, save the my bad for when you brought the wrong IPA. What to do? Just treat them like any other coworker when it comes to rules and consequences for not following the rules. They are easily butthurt, articulate, and sneaky, the narcissistic kind, not in general. They know the right thing to say to weasel out of taking responsibility and expect praise for a job half-assed. Don't give it to them. That teaches them nothing. They are also quick to say sorry, but then don't change their offending behaviors. I like to say, don't apologize. Tell me what you'll do differently next time. Get everything in writing, their job description, commitments, fuck-ups, just so everyone's clear and operating from the same set of guidelines. Might want to remind them that their paycheck is the participation award, so they shouldn't sit around waiting for expressed verbal praise for the bare minimum. Well, that's the list. Overt and covert narcissistic behaviors. Did you learn anything? We'll see in the next chapter.